Hi, Patrice. How
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
are you doing? AI companion.
Okay.
Okay, I get that. And now I'm going to start the transcript. It's really amazing. It's Zoom does an incredible job generating a summary, a quick recap with artificial intelligence. I mean, it's very mainstream in what it leaves. It censors a lot of stuff,
Amazing, yeah.
but it still does a really nice summary. If someone doesn't have the time to, read the entire
Yeah,
transcript,
but
so.
very useful. Yes, I tell you, the topic that you have is the zeitgeist, I think, right?
With Trump being in office for 1 week.
I understand that very well. The zeitgeist of the Trump and all that. And can you hear me well?
Oh, yeah, very well. Oh, you have a nice backdrop. I like
Yeah,
your
it's part of
backdrop.
my virtual, you know.
Yeah, it looks cool.
I have a mess in the real backdrop. It's a complete
Yeah.
because I'm trying to set this office, you know, the way it should be. And anyway, yeah, so you know, I was wondering if I could add an extra topic.
Sure.
What concerns me is, well, this is like an Uber topic. What happens is that I often think about the direction of humanity today. I mean, we know where the West is going, and the West, as long as the United States is in command, and those people who own the United States remain in command, we know where it's going to go, with variations, of course, adjustments. And Trump represents an adjustment to the main approach until Biden, you know, which was all-out imperialism, blah blah. But what concerns me is essentially the direction of humanity in terms of its transition, eventual transition to socialism. Because right now we exist in the BRICS countries, particularly Russia and China, which are obviously the default leaders of BRICS and therefore the alternative for humanity. We exist in a world of mixed economy in which the capitalist sectors continue to be very important. Now, I understand why it is happening historically, but I think we should toss around a few thoughts about this because we know that capitalism sooner or later begins to create more and more toxicities, problems that cannot be resolved by its own logic. So if you give capitalism too much space and too much importance, it creates eventually a situation that not only delays the transition to proper socialism, but it actually defeats it. It delays it by breaking down all the, shall we say, dynamics that would lead that society to socialism. Now, because we live in a transition when we have a very narrow window because of the environmental parameters that exist within in our time. I think that the transition to socialism should be carefully watched and accelerated as much as possible without being imprudent about it. And I don't see right now, in a default organic sense, we see that there is a sort of a drift towards socialism because it's the only healthy or logical, let's say, direction in which society can go at this point. China, for example, has made a lot of progress in that sense. Russia is still dragging its feet. There is a powerful capitalist sector. I hope that that Putin will see the light. But these are topics that need to be discussed, you know. I mean,
All right, so I have the question I have developed based on your comments, Patrice, is With capitalism collapsing everywhere, is there any hope for the rest of the world to consider socialism?
Yeah, well, capitalism is collapsing. Let me put it this way. I think that the existence of capitalism today, as the existence of imperialism, Western imperialism,
Okay.
the death of imperialism, American imperialism, is shall we say, over-announced. In ours is a Many people on the left say, it's on its last leg in this deathbed and all that. But speaking historically, the time that it can take for this damn system to finally disappear,
Well, it could be decades.
decades, many decades,
Yeah.
would be another century before this country really releases its grip on humanity. And in the meantime, the people in the trying to build an alternative world, which will per logical force, will have to be socialist, mainly socialist. It can have some NEP, NEP type of, let's say, patches there to do this or that, to achieve this or that, as you see even in Cuba today. But or Vietnam is full of capitalist islands. But essentially, I think that say what you want to say.
Hey, Quan, how are you doing?
How are you? How are you?
I'm doing fine. The Eastern Standard Time zone is in full force this morning. We've got
Okay. Oh.
Patrice in New York and Quan in Montreal. So and actually Magnus Kiergaard, our visual editor, said he
Oh,
was going to join
wonderful.
us, which will bring some
Okay.
youth, which will bring some youth to the crowd. So Patrice just had a wonderful question. He said that he would like to add some kind of a question about, since Western imperialism and capitalism is everywhere, and it could take decades or a century for it to finally collapse. Is there any hope for the rest of the world to consider socialism sooner than later? So I think that's a good topic to bring up. Do you have anything you'd like to talk about, Quan?
Well, I think that what I would like to talk about is a little bit in the same direction that Patrice, okay, because it's right that the old system is still there. So the brightest way to avoid a direct war with the old system and with the kakistocrats is precisely to build another one just besides them. And I want to talk about DeepSeek because DeepSeek is precisely a brilliant example of how to build a system that is open source and truly open source and not fake open source like ChatGPT, and offering it to all mankind. Precisely, you have ChatGPT and their Stargate project that now is probably in shambles because they would not be capable to get the profits that they were expecting from their future victims, since you have a DeepSeek that is operational right now. And you know that DeepSeek is the construction of guys whose day job was quantitative easy, not easing, but quantitative analysis. And they built DeepSeek as a hobby, and they offer it to all mankind for free. And that is why I call an aristocratic attitude. And the more you have that kind of aristocratic man offering free stuff for all mankind, but not free stuff in the sense of bread and circus, but free stuff in the sense of epistemological growth and development of their mind, like with DeepSeek. Well, that, let's say, the free world, okay, because you know perfectly that with the KFC Azazel,
Their speech is always Orwellian. They call themselves the free world, but they are not the free world. We are the free world. So the true free world will grow step by step. And at a certain threshold, they would not have a choice than either to stay in their little corner or to join us. But it will take, as I said last time, probably the time of the next three generations.
Right. Yeah, in that sense, I envision something. I am very encouraged by what you say, Kwan. And as a matter of fact, I would appreciate it if you would guide me later on to more materials in this particular topic, because I don't know much about it. I am very, I am particularly concerned, not concerned, but actually both celebratory and concerned about what the acceleration of human productivity through the addition of more and more digital routines to the labor process is going to accelerate the crisis of capitalism, wherever capitalism is being practiced, as qua capitalism. So, in other words, it will create organic pressures under any system. So the sector that is capitalist in China, for example, will also have an attrition in terms of the labor inputs. Because as you put more and more digital inputs into that labor process and the what do you call the production function, you're going to see that the requirements for human labor become less and less, in which case then organically the emergence of a socialist mode of production begins to appear, organically. In that, I think China is way ahead, way ahead. And I am more than celebratory about that. I think it's considering what China has accomplished, what China today represents in on a broad front of human progress, a very broad front. I think there's nothing comparable, nothing comparable. On a
Yes.
second tier, close to it or approaching it, you find other nations, Russia, so on and so forth. But the United States is falling way behind with the rest of the West, deservedly so. Because it has all the toxicities of the old system with none of the possible solutions. So there is an organic drift that humanity will eventually follow in the old framework of reference that Churchill said about the United States. The United States always does the right thing after trying everything else. I mean, even that war criminal, despicable son of a bitch, was capable of sophisticated thinking, as you know. So in our case, I see the drift of humanity, led, of course, by the more conscious socialist leadership, accelerating more and more in its transition to the socialist path, but in the, shall we say, reactionary West and in the old-fashioned West, in the imperialist West, with all the toxicity, you will see this implosion, because the fundamental forms of social interaction will be collapsing, because the digital revolution, instead of actually accelerating the profits and all that, which it does in the very short term, it will be killing the system in a medium to longer term. So what
Absolutely.
anybody's case.
I would say that I think, okay, that the core answer is not in technical evolution, in the sense that we have technical evolutions for sure, and I'm not against technical evolution. On the contrary, but the core answer is in the epistemological growth, okay, meaning that once again, you were alluding to the Republic by Plato in our last conversation.
Yes.
The battle right now is between the kakistocratic man of the West and the aristocratic man of the rest. Okay, and
Yes.
they call us in a disdainful manner the rest, but frankly, from a philosophical perspective, they are the rest. Okay, we are the aristocratic man. They are the kakistocratic man, in the sense that once again, I'm coming back to ChatGPT and DeepSeek. the attitude that they had, meaning trying to keep the knowledge within a very close circle and making people pay $200 a month for accessing their services, contrary to the attitude of the Chinese guy who offer it for free. And it is the perfect illustration of an aristocratic behavior, meaning people that are driven by playful exploration, by the motivation for inventivity, for discovery, for creativity, as opposed to the kakistocratic attitude, which is precisely to keep stuff in a closed system and to control the order through that closed system. And the people of the world, they are not dumb. They see who are the gentlemen and who are the predators. It won't take time because people are afraid, of course, okay? And it's absolutely normal to be afraid because if you displease the kakistocrats, they wouldn't bomb your cities, they wouldn't bomb your villages. And if you you look at what is happening at the Gaza Strip, I understand that most people are afraid, okay? It's not all nations who are China, Russia, Iran, having hypersonics and having atomic bombs. So we wouldn't have to go step by step, it's inevitable. And we wouldn't have to intimidate the kakistocrat to a certain extent, so they would not do something too stupid. And if you look at what Trump is doing right now, I would say that the best we can do is to do nothing because they are stupid enough to take ridiculous decisions that would make everyone detest them, even yeah. their closest allies.
Right. You're right. I agree with you 100%. And I think that what you refer as the aristocratic sphere of humanity versus the kakistocratic sphere, the aristocratic sphere is not only healthy in the ways in which you describe, it's very encouraging to see that. It is also morally superior by definition. It doesn't have to claim it. It is morally superior because instead of being grounded in selfishness, which is the essence, the oxygen of capitalism, in which every single interaction in humanity is basically projected on the basis of selfishness, exploitation, manipulation, and therefore mendacity. None of those things apply in the model that you describe. The aristocratic model, the true Aristotelian and Socratic model, aristocratic model doesn't use any of those things. None of those parameters are even present there because it is predicated on a different assumption of a higher moral virtue that therefore automatically benefits people and reduces the frictions in society. So, you know, now in the case of Trump, as you mentioned it, and I'm glad you brought it up, I see very clearly, and I'm probably, maybe you will may agree with me and my colleague Jeff also, I see that there is like a retraction of the empire. Contrary to what many people are assuming, that this guy is very brutal in his expressions of American imperialism, which he is in a style, but his bark is a lot more intimidating than his actual bite. And what happens with him is that in part, his clumsiness and stupidity, as well as that of his gang of people who advise him or try to do things, is basically already accelerating the contradictions of the empire and bringing it to its knees. But there's also the fact that, the empire has reached a point in which some sectors of the ruling class are beginning to intuit, because the ruling class in the United States has been enveloped in hubris for so long that their natural intelligence, such as it is, and it may have existed at some point, has been stunted. It's a dumbed-down ruling class. And they are beginning to intuit, and you see this evolution in the way they have denied the reality of the Ukraine war, the reality of this, they deny reality for as long as they can. But eventually, objective reality imposes itself. And what you're seeing today is a retraction of the old imperial system as predicated by Biden, which goes all the way back to the Sayo neocon model of exercising imperialism in this cancerous way all over the place, without it, and then pursuing, the war with China, provoking, Russia, provoking Iran, et cetera, et cetera. And the Trump, you see already the prefigurement of a retraction of that approach and a return to the 19th century modus operandi of empires, spheres of influence. So what Trump is predicating basically is a return to an old-fashioned, shall we say, crude imperialism, which is visible to all, which will be resisted by many eventually, because he'll step on so many shoes and so many feet that it will be like a widespread revulsion and eventually resistance, including the United States. And the contradictions at home will accelerate because he will be offering no real solutions to the class struggle and the tensions and dynamics of the class struggle at home. So sphere of influence is what it's at,
I would
I
like
think.
to point out that after World War II, Europe was very socialist. Western France, Germany, the Britain, they were very, very socialist. The productive forces, the airlines, the steel companies, the telephone companies, the utilities, the roads, the ports, the airports were all people owned, and they applied what Charles de Gaulle called the dirigiste form of an economy. Well, that's exactly what
That's
China's
mixed economy.
doing.
Mixed
I mean, it's
economy.
just what China is doing. They're just the government has got is there. They're on top of it. They're allocating resources. They're trying to maximize the benefit for the working class, and the white collar class. And they but obviously the privateers hated that and detested that because they could not extract rent from Air France, rent from
Exactly.
Deutsche Telekom, rent, rent from all of these social from the some Spanish steel company or Fiat, the car manufacturer or whatever in Italy. And so the model's there, but unfortunately it's and it's no coincidence. And I'm sure Quan, being Francophone, will know this, that the 30 years after 1945 in France were called the Golden 30. And they were called the Golden 30 because that was when they had this dirigiste, socialist, not command like in the Soviet Union or in the Mao Zedong era, which was a huge success, but and it was also a huge success in the Soviet Union with Stalin.
Absolutely was.
And
Yes.
so, but it doesn't have to be that way. It can be like Europe after World War II, but then of course, just like in the West, starting in the 1980s, that they don't want just a little bit. They want it all. They want to privatize everything. They want to privatize the air we breathe. They want to privatize our pee, our poop. They want to privatize, ambulances and police if they could, like they used to back in the 19th century. And so it's there, but it's just been hijacked. So I think I think and then the left in Europe and well, the left in the United States doesn't even exist anymore. But the left in Europe and has also been triangulated, has also been gentrified, and is completely, mainstream, in bed with these privateers, and they've been
Fake
totally
left.
compromised. Yeah, the fake left, the
The
cardboard
fake
left.
left.
So I
Right.
don't know. So no one can say that the West does not have a working model. It's just
They abandoned it. They betrayed it.
they
Take
betrayed
it from
it,
within.
and they didn't fight for it. And so anyway, I just want to make that comment. And also, I liked your all's comments about the fact that, DeepSeek is an open source system, and that GPT is a closed system. And I immediately thought of the idea that, well, in capitalism, monopolies, the capitalism really only functions well for the aristocratic elites if it's a monopoly. And that's what we have now. We have basically two or three companies that control everything in all in each in every sector.
In every sector, yeah.
And so monopoly is like a closed system. It's like a closed system. And with a socialist infrastructure like in China, and I think Russia is a lot more socialist than we realize, and Iran is socialist, very, very socialist. And so I think with socialism and a benign, noble, aristocratic government, can allocate, in an open system to the have-nots so that they can also participate. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to say, Jeff, because I like the French civilization, I want to give a little tribute to France, because what is happening now in China, for example, in Shanghai, you have the combination of research centers and of industry on the same place, okay? For example, for artificial intelligence or for robotics in Shanghai. Well, the model was strange because in France it's what's called bureau d'études. And those bureau d'études were the engines for the development of Électricité de France, for example, EDF, or other major companies of France. So that idea that the thinkers, the researchers, the inventors would be at the same place than the workers and the industrial development was excellent. And you know perfectly that the kakistocrats and the plutocrats step by step destroy all the bureau d'études in France with the idea to get those companies for peanuts, and that's what they managed to do in the last 40, 50 years.
Absolutely. And
Absolutely.
it was Charles de Gaulle who had that vision. I mean, he was for he was a he was a he was a dour aristocratic. I mean, but he was a good aristocrat. He was deeply Roman Catholic, a family man. In fact, they called him the marble the marble penis, la bite de marbre, bite de marbre, because they la bite de marbre because they tried so many honeypots to try to get him to compromise him and blackmail him. So they sent him all these gorgeous women, and he stayed faithful to his wife until his last breath. And so he was extremely, and I think this is another thing. I think this is another element that we need to consider, although Quan has pointed out that Imperial China had a lot of corruption, but they were got over it because of this Confucian, Taoist, Buddhist, umbrella that I think, reined in some of the excesses of the corruption. But, Napoleon was uncorruptible. De Gaulle was uncorruptible, you know, and I think and Mao was uncorruptible. She is uncorruptible.
Chuan
She
Lai
is
was
un
also.
yeah, Zhou Enlai. I think Ho Chi Minh, you know, Kim Il-sung, you know, these great leaders, Castro,
Castro, yeah.
these great leaders, they were uncorruptible. And I think that's another aspect that we need to consider. But it was Charles de Gaulle's vision to make France a nuclear power, to make France a nuclear power militarily and civilian-wise with EDF. And it was his dirigiste. I'm getting my French and English mixed up. Dirigiste, you know, vision that he imposed on France, and that dirigiste vision also included these research centers and these pôles, les pôles de technologie, and France, after World War II, had one of the greatest education systems in the world. It was unbelievably good, and it was and it was and it was and it was it was it was it was merit, merit meritocratic. It was meritocratic, just like in China. And you know, you didn't go to university unless you passed a test to prove that you were intelligent enough not to waste the professor's time. And so and all of that has just been sold down the river by, you know, by these by the bank of by the City of London, Wall Street, the CAC 40, which is the Wall Street of France. And it's all gone now. The educational system is in shambles. The France is an example of the rest of the West, including the United States, on a smaller scale. France, the United States, France is not manufacturing anything anymore, you know, except the three car companies. They've sold everything else off. So it's we've got to get back to that Euro socialist model for the West. I don't ever expect the West to be, you know, a Mao era, you know, communist socialist system, which was incredibly successful. But it's not going to work it's not even working for Vietnam and China now. The only country that really comes closest to the Mao model, of course, is the DPRK, North Korea, and they're doing great. I mean,
Yeah, definitely great.
they're doing incredibly well. Iran has a mixed model, like private public, and it's just the West that's become so neoliberalized and so you know, so privatized that it's destroying the 99%.
Yeah.
So
I would. So go
Oh,
ahead.
sorry, Patrice, go ahead. Okay,
No problem.
I would like to introduce one thing concerning Trump, because our subject today is how the Trump administration will impact the world, if I'm not mistaken. So, do you know what is called the North American Technate, TECHNATE? And that North American Technate, it sounds a little bit conspiracy theory, but it is the case, in the sense that it has been prepared for a long time, and the presence of Elon Musk in the Trump administration, with probably the Palantir spy system that will be implemented at the first step, wouldn't be, let's say, the preliminary step to the creation of that North American technate. And when Trump is making his clownish behavior, saying that he wants to annex Canada and to invade Mexico, for example, it looks a little bit laughable for us. But if you know deep history, it's not laughable, okay? Because with the Palantir spy system from Peter Thiel, and with Elon Musk proposing that framework of the North American technique, be informed that it is the first step to the creation of the brick broader society in North America. And by North America, I mean Canada, the US, and Mexico, and maybe a little bit of Colombia. And of course, the rest of Latin America will be, as usual, the vassal states, which the most grotesque example is, of course, Argentina, okay,
Yeah.
because that guy, Milei,
Milei.
simply
Javier
destroy
Milei.
his country. It is,
Yeah.
And you know that his advisor is supposedly the spirit of his dead dog that he communicate with channeling, okay, to show to what extent the oligarchy is choosing absolutely degenerate people to be their mouthpieces.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, look at Trudeau, look at Macron.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Look at Starmer, look at Schultz.
It's
at least Maloney in Italy has a brain. And Macron is a smart guy too, but he is a Rothschild's Pygmalion. I've been saying that, you know, starting in the 1980s, the Western leadership, well, Jack Chirac was a good president, but after
Chirac was a nationalist.
Yeah, he was a nationalist and a patriot.
In the mold of,
Nixon, you know, is a much maligned, but he was the last U.S. president that tried to be presidential, and they kicked him out. And of course, they blew John F. Kennedy's brains out. But
yeah,
but since then, you know, it's just these guys outside of, and after Charles de Gaulle, I mean, you know, Chirac was okay, but then after Chirac, you know, Sarkozy and Hollande and Macron are just like,
it was all a downfall.
It's just Rothschild,
you know,
administration 1, 2, 3, and so. I call them dwarves. I call these leaders dwarves because that's exactly what they are. They're not
yeah.
even really human. They're just disgusting sock puppets, and it's extremely, and Ursula von der Leyen. I mean, she's a dictator. She's a totalitarian, tyrannical dictator. And she gets away with signing a $71 billion contract with Pfizer because her husband works for a sub company of Pfizer. I mean, it's so bad, you know, it's so
mind
bad.
Blocking.
Yeah.
Mind blocking.
Patrice, you wanted to say something?
I just wanted to go back for a moment to the framework in which the rolling back of socialist gains, political gains in the post-war period. It didn't take place in a vacuum. It was, of course, accelerated and energized by the CIA, which had just been created. And you saw the CIA put its stamp already. The first subversion that they carried out was in Italy in the 1948 election, I think, or 47. CIA was created in 1947. And they basically swung that election against the communists. And that was the first kind of coup that was, you know, submerged. And what we need to keep in mind is why there was this social democratic wave that established itself in the immediate post-war in Europe and created this high standard of living, relatively speaking, this labor aristocracy and so on and so forth in Western Europe. And why was that actually implemented by the ruling classes of the West? And the obvious answer is that the Soviet model was there, giving everybody chills in the Western ruling circles. Right, we have to basically put something up for the workers or else we're going to have a real revolution here. So they came up with all these social democratic measures, a welfare capitalist state, and so on and so forth. Now, this is no accident that the Scandinavians who lived next door to the Soviet Union were among the first to implement this extensive social democratic model. But after the Soviet Union collapse, and before that, the most, I would say, serious blow against socialism in general was the killing of the communist parties of the West, the real communist parties. And that happened because Khrushchev came up with this revisionist shit against Stalin, told all kinds of lies. The history of Soviet revisionism is basically atrocious, and created all these dynamics that allowed then all of these parties of the West, beginning with the Italian Communist Party, was the largest communist party in the world at that time, believe it or not. And then the French, the Italians.
Okay, had the largest
The
kind.
Italian
Okay,
Communist
had,
Party
no,
was
it was the
numerically
largest.
the
Okay.
largest Communist Party. It was larger in numbers than the Soviet Communist Party. So the Italian Communist Party, boom, collapsed. Then you have the eventually the French, which was the one that resisted the longest, because the Italians collapsed first with Eurocomunismo, and then they went to the Spaniards, el Eurocomunismo, and then from that, the only Communist Party that was still standing was the French, which Juan probably knows quite a bit about it. And eventually, the Communist Party of France also collapsed. And after that, the actual idea of socialism implemented on the idea of a central planning system, which answers the question, who is the government working for the working class, for the majority, or for these privileged minorities? Because that's what defines socialism. It doesn't define socialism is not defined by public institutions. I say, if that were the case, then to have a public library would mean, oh, we have socialism. A fire department that is public, oh, we have socialism. No. Socialism only exists when there is central planning. The government is in the hands of a group of people who plan everything for the benefit of the vast majority of people.
Yeah,
And that is what
absolutely.
happened. Don't you agree?
Absolutely, because you know that because of the old hereditary families in Europe, you know that there are more solidarity in the upper class of those old families than in the different countries. Okay, I take a very clear example. During the Second World War, the upper bourgeoisie of France preferred the Nazis to be the victors than
Absolutely.
to get the communists on their backs.
Yeah.
I think that's a book by a French historian saying la défaite voulue, meaning the desire defeat, because they were almost welcoming the Nazis, because the Nazis were getting rid for them of the communists at the time, who were perceived as much more of a danger for them than the Nazis. Because after all, those people have family links, eh? Many Nazis officers were of the upper nobility and were linked by family link to the French aristocracy.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Well,
As a matter of fact, it shows you once again that class trumps nationalism in many places. Class is one of the things that usually prevails, because people don't abandon their privileges very easily. They have to be forced to abandon them.
I also want to point out that it's not only just Europe that was forced to offer socialism to the people after World War II in order to avoid a real, a communist socialist revolution. And it wasn't just Italy that won the first elections were won by the communists. It also happened in Britain and France.
Right,
So
right.
there was really a red tide that had to be crushed, and of course with the Gladio, fascist armies that were left behind, and Operation Paperclip, and the exodus of tens of thousands of Nazis were taken out of Germany to infect Western Europe and the United States and South America, et cetera, and also Canada.
Canada is infected to the
Yeah,
hilt.
the who was it? The Christine Nyland, or whatever her name is, or her grandfather was a Nazi. And
Exactly, yeah. In
so,
Canada.
but FDR had to do the same thing. I mean, the Wall Street to save their necks, had to let Roosevelt also offer a lot of socialist programs for the people in the 1930s after the rape of the economy, that ended in 1929 with the collapse of Wall Street. And but and the United States had pretty, FDR, again, he took that dirigiste model for the economy in the 1930s and up into World War II. And the only aspect of the European socialist program that the United States did not get was universal health care. And that was because of the power of the American Medical Association and the doctors who were against it. So that also happened. And also Wall Street was enamored with Nazism. You
Oh
know,
my God.
Ford, Henry Ford, and all the they loved they in fact Roosevelt had to tell them to quit working with Nazi Germany after the United States declared war because they were deeply embedded in the Nazi economy. And of course, Wall Street tried to assassinate Roosevelt in 1934 with a fascist coup. So, the fear of communism, the fear of communism in the West knows no bounds. It knows no bounds.
Because she the door was open and hold on a second, guys. One moment.
You got to take care of his cat.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Sorry, that's my
No, that's
dog.
okay.
I don't have human children, but I have animal children, and for me they're the same. I love animals the way I love all helpless people and helpless beings, and that's it. In any case, with Jeff and Quan, I can't tell you how much I enjoy. I'm speaking here now selfishly, how much I enjoy these discussions, and
I'm cold.
I learned a great deal, and I intend to, I hope, do anything possible to have this as a regular thing. Quan is a tremendous treasure of information, and
Sorry, I'm cold.
it encourages me. There you go.
I'm in Taiwan, but it's cold. It's cold
There
as
you
well.
are. Okay. What you were saying, how the American bourgeoisie, the ruling class, the aristocracy, the moral aristocracy of this country, was so gung-ho for fascism. They enabled, Franco, among other things. Later on, they helped Mussolini. They helped, Hitler, of course. But essentially, what else am I going to say? Essentially, the FDR system, the FDR regime or government, was basically what saved capitalism from itself in the United States, because capitalism came very close. Because at that point, there was such a thing as a Communist Party in the United States. And it's therefore not an accident that precisely with the death of FDR, the moment FDR died, because FDR had even envisioned a United Nations that would be like a global government. But the death of FDR immediately introduced then the opposite number in terms of ideology and in terms of the ruling classes that controlled him, and that was Truman. The moment that FDR died, Truman took over, and Truman represented exactly the opposite forces, created immediately a CIA, which was at the urging of Wall Street. The CIA, ever since it was created as this, shall we say, global antagonist of world revolution. It was created to stop world revolution. And it has done, I must say, an excellent job. They have committed every crime and anything imaginable that is dirty and filthy and revolting they have done. No excuses, no apologies. And that system will remain in place until there is a true revolution in this country.
Absolutely.
I just want to say the 10 people who started the CIA in the private sector, and of course, you know,
Wall,
Trump,
Wall Street, all of them.
They were all Wall Street lawyers.
Wall Street, all of them.
They were all
the
Wall
Dallas,
Street
the
lawyers.
Dallas, the Dallas brothers,
yeah,
and the
they're all
Bushes.
Wall Street
all
lawyers.
Street.
I mean, it's just,
Wall Street.
Yeah. Go ahead, Quan.
Yeah. I wanted to go back with a psychological element and dimension. Okay, you know perfectly that Truman was the son of a grocer, and there's nothing wrong to be the son of a grocer. Don't take me wrong, but the problem that he had the mind of a grocer, and he was deeply impressed by the nobleman called Winston Churchill.
Yes,
and when and that nobleman when he came to Fenton and Fulton, his
yes.
Native home, to give the infamous Iron Curtain speech, he was completely mesmerized, and he accepted Churchill's plan to isolate Russia so that the British would be capable to manage to maintain their empire under the financial dimension, even if they lost their land-based empire, let's say. So here, we are at the core of what I call oligarchical manipulations, in the sense that Roosevelt was a kind of nobleman too, okay? If Roosevelt did not die on April 12, 1945, I think that the world would have been different, because Roosevelt, the aristocrat, would not have been impressed by another aristocrat, Winston Churchill. But sadly, the U.S. was managed by the son of a grocer. And once again, there's nothing wrong to be the son of a grocer. But sadly, he had the mind of a grocer.
Yeah.
And he was impressed by a nobleman called Winston Churchill.
I so, tell you what,
very good point.
You talk about aristocratic manipulation. I've done the research, I've done quite a bit of research, and I guarantee you the Brits assassinated FDR. They poisoned him.
Yeah.
They wanted him out. He told Churchill, you cannot keep your British Empire. I mean, he wanted to include China and the Soviet Union and Europe. And he really, you know, FDR had this vision of, you know, of a benign, you know, capitalist system that would include, of course, China wasn't communist then, but he really had a vision, and it meant the end of the British Empire, and he told him that, and I you know, it's a long story, but the British agent who was assigned to the White House was Roald Dahl. And the MI6 created a team of 12 ghostwriters who wrote all of his children's stories. And the one time that he wrote one article in a journal in Washington, D.C., he was the laughingstock of Washington, D.C. So he had carte blanche access to the White House. He could walk into the Oval Office whenever he felt like it. And so he was literally a termite, an assassin in the White House. And he is the model for James Bond, because he fucked every female on two legs in Washington, D.C. He was a real, real seducer, and handsome and suave. I don't think he actually gave FDR the poison. He had a couple of underlings do it, but I mean, FDR was killed because he was just like Lincoln was killed by the Brits, and McKinley was killed by the Brits, and the Brits are the biggest assassins in the world.
Oh,
And so and once they got Henry Wallace out from being vice president, that was a pooch at the Democratic convention, and they had their stooge, their stooge, sock puppet Trump, Truman. Once they got him in as VP, I mean that was the end of the that was the end of FDR, man. They couldn't wait to kill that guy, and
absolutely.
so. He was he FDR was too nice to the little people to, and too
I think
hard
that
too hard on Wall Street to
I think that what Kuan was
survive.
referring to as the aristocratic model, by virtue of its intrinsic governing morality, was personified in FDR, you know. Not to mention that, as he mentioned, the fact that Truman was this man from the boondocks in America, to put it that way, right? And impressed with all the sophistication, the grand monde of represented by Churchill, right? And obviously, nothing good would follow because he was taken over by the Rhodesians, to put it that way, right? And has been essentially since then, in many ways, what we might call the Rhodesian model of inserting itself like a parasite and taking over the larger body. The Brits have done a brilliant job. And later on, it was no accident that it was Truman who basically put his imprimatur in the creation of Israel. Although, I might add, the Soviet Union was in there at the moment of birth of Israel too, for its own reasons. It's a very complicated thing, and may I ask a personal question, Kwan?
Yeah, sure.
You're living now in France?
No, I'm living in Montreal,
Oh, Montreal.
Canada.
Oh, Montreal. Okay.
You all are neighbors. You all are right across the border. You all
Because
should
I'm in New
be.
York.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We're quite close.
We're basically like seven or 8 hours by car.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I used to go to Montreal. I think it's a beautiful city.
Oh, I love it. I love Montreal.
A beautiful city. And I tell you, I was accepted by McGill at one point for my doctoral, blah, blah, blah. And then I didn't do it there. But it's a beautiful city. I mean, it's just stunning. I mean, Montreal, that entire La Belle Provence, it just says it all. I mean, it's a beautiful place.
Vive Quebec.
Canada.
Yes.
Quebec.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. No, no,
Charles
no.
de
I
Gaulle, vive le Quebec.
Oh,
Wait,
libre,
no.
libre.
It was Libre Quebec, yeah.
The reason why I mentioned this is because if you're in Montreal, you know how difficult it would be for the United States, according to the Trumpian model, to absorb Canada because they have the French part of Canada. It would be
No.
very difficult to absorb. Absolutely not.
Yeah, absolutely. Because my wife is French Canadian, and I have to say that I have a weakness for French civilization and French speaking people. Thanks God for Quebec in Canada, because it's increased tremendously the civilizational value of Canada because of Quebec. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you studied, you went to school to speak, you went to French schools, didn't you, Quan?
My mother taught me French because she went to La Sorbonne for études françaises,
Okay,
littérature
d'accord.
française.
But
I spoke French when I was in Hong Kong with my British friends, because I learned English only when I came to Canada later on. And with the British people in Hong Kong, I spoke French. Sometimes life can be very paradoxical.
So you grew up in Hong Kong.
Yes.
Oh, I
Wow.
didn't know that after all these years. So you grew up,
Yes.
you and Peter Mann.
Yes,
Another
yes.
China Writers Group member, both grew up
Peter,
in
that
Hong
is.
Kong. Did you go to Catholic schools like he did?
No, I had a private schooling at home.
Okay.
I never went to the public system in Hong Kong, and I came to Canada definitely after my marriage with my wife at
Oh,
18,
at 18, okay.
but I was in Canada sometimes before 18 years old, but it was not definitive. It was definitive after 18 years old.
Okay. So, but your mother,
And you
but
met
your
your
mother
wife?
taught you in French. Your mother taught you in French, right? Your
Yeah.
French is your mother tongue.
Yeah. Wow. If you can say so, but I spoke Cantonese before I
Oh,
spoke
before
French. But
you
I
okay, thank
started
you.
to speak French when I was maybe 3, 4 years old.
Okay, got it. All right. All
And that
right.
makes you
Really
English.
interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why your accent is
Do
completely French, right?
you do you have do you have do you still have your Hong Kong passport?
Well, my in-laws insisted that I get the Canadian
Of
passport, so you
course, of
know that
course.
China doesn't accept a double nationality, eh?
Yeah.
Because of that, I lost the Chinese passport, but I think that I can get it back if needed.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
And
Really interesting. I did
so
not know that. I thought you
that's an
went
interesting
to French
biographical
school. I thought you
idea.
went to French schools in Quebec. I didn't know that. That's really interesting.
Well, but I went into medical school in French in
Okay.
Montreal
Okay. Okay.
after that.
Okay.
But
Gotcha.
it was later on.
Okay.
So
Well,
you.
come to Taiwan and Evelyn will cook you a wonderful, wonderful French meal.
Yeah, sure. Wasn't Peter Mann also born in Hong Kong and then he lived part of his life in Canada?
Well, he is in
Peter
Canada
Mann.
now. He's in Vancouver.
Yeah, see,
He's
he has like a
he's
history.
also Canadian. He
Yeah.
also immigrated
Yeah.
from Hong Kong, just like Quan did. I did not know. That's really interesting, Quan. I'm impressed.
Very,
Wow.
very, very interesting, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
That's why,
So,
oh, sorry, go ahead.
no. So going back to what you were saying before, you know, the evolution, the impressionable Truman and all the disasters that followed, because not only did he create this malignancy called the CIA, he expanded other aspects of the then budding neo-imperialist American system, because America has been an empire since the turn of the century, since the turn of the 20th century, at least. It had the makings of an empire. The first grab was the first land grab was against Mexico. As you know, practically one third of the United States is Mexico, right? What used to be Mexico. And under the usual imperialistic pretext and this and that you aggress me, blah, 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 we have to vengeance, and they invaded Mexico several times. But the malignancy that they created under Truman, and then you have Truman there dropping the bomb on the Japanese, you know, and never losing a sleep over that. And that was cynical to the nth degree, because you know, and we know here, that that was done to just basically push back against the Soviets. They wanted to demonstrate the Soviet, we got this and you don't have it, and you better, you know, don't even think of rolling over Europe. They were very afraid that the Soviets, they always project, right? They think that the things that they would do, the other guy is going to do, right? In this case, the Soviets were going to take over with their armies and everything, all of Europe and the rest of the world and whatever. And okay, demonstration here, we got the bomb. Don't do it.
Don't
So,
forget,
you know,
we also need to
cynical.
point out that it's not, we say the CIA, but the British MI6
Oh my God.
was created long before the CIA, and Mossad was created in 1948, and its roots were already developed
Am I six?
in what is today Palestine, starting in 1917. So I basically, if you say CIA, you say Mossad, CIA, MI6. It's just one big
Yeah. Absolutely.
cabal, and
Yeah.
spanning three spanning three continents. Well, Europe's not really a continent, but Europe, the Middle East, and North America. I mean, they just, DGSC, I think it is, and DMD in Germany. And then probably the Canadians and the Australians and the New Zealanders are probably like, lower tier,
Lower members of the club.
lower members, the Five Eyes.
Yeah.
But Mossad, CIA, and MI6 are just one gigantic blob.
I think that the only qualification you can make about this notorious malignant club is basically that the French member is not trusted by the others.
Well,
The
especially with De
Anglos don't
Gaulle.
trust the French
Yeah,
because
it's very Anglo. It's
there've been
very Anglo.
several occasions when the French members came out from the shadows, and they published even books, famous books. There is a famous book by an ex-general who was a member of the French security services, and he came out from the shadows and published this book, the Le Devoir, the I don't know, the duty of speaking up and so like that, and embarrassed the shit out of all this, CIA types in Europe, In any case, it's we have, I think, people who are aware of what is going on in the world have more than their work cut out for them. That includes us, obviously. And I think the age of Trump will be a very interesting age because we'll see what kind of measures. I mean, I might ask you to think and tell me what you think, obviously, about it. I get the feeling that a lot of the repressive measures that are being taken in Europe today, like in Germany against free speech, or in Britain even hauling you to jail and all that for writing the wrong things or whatever, are being studied very carefully by the American ruling class today. In other words, they're using Europe as a lab to see, what kind of pressures you can put on a population that has been fed the idea that they live in a democracy. And then, okay, this is what we need to do here. Because they're afraid that if they do this repressive move too early, it might backfire. But if they studied it carefully, according to the models that they see in Britain, in Germany, in France, et cetera, they say, this is the way to go.
Juan,
I don't know.
what do you think about Trump? Then I'll give you my 2 cents worth, and then I think we ought to call it today. Tell
Well,
us what you think, Juan.
I would say that Trump will bring three major changes. I think, okay, first, let's not forget that Trump is a plutocrat that is being. Trump is a small plutocrat, okay? We have to understand that. There are plutocrats who are much, much, much higher than him. He's a small plutocrat trying to be accepted into the inner circle. But the paradox of Trump is being a small plutocrat, he's also what I call a national imperialist, contrary to the globalist imperialist, okay? Those are the two main political characteristics of Trump. But I make the hypothesis that the same that Truman was mesmerized by the nobleman called Winston Churchill, the fact that Trump, being a small plutocrat, craving to be accepted by the higher plutocrats, he would probably betray the American people a second time because he wants so much to be accepted into the inner circles. I give a very clear example. He would make everything to increase the interest rates and to increase the value of the US dollars. Why? Because by doing so, he would benefit the higher plutocrats and his friends. But for helping the American people for reindustrialization, he would have to decrease the value of the American dollars in order to restart industrialization. And I don't think that he would do that. Okay, that's the first thing that I think about Trump because of his inner contradiction as a small plutocrat willing to be accepted within the inner circle, but at the same time, I think he's sincere. Okay, he wants to do something for the American people, but he would not be capable to transcend his desire to be accepted within the inner circle. So he would do everything for his friends or for his bosses, the higher plutocrats. That's one. For two, because the fact that he wouldn't manage to make the money, the American money go higher, money would go back to the US and the developing countries having to pay that debt in American dollars wouldn't have problems. And maybe here China can do something, because you know that China has a foreign reserve of 3,300 billion US dollars. So maybe you know that China started to open a small counter in Saudi Arabia dealing with USD, right? So China maybe can lend USD money to the countries needing USD to refund their debt label in USD. Okay, I would say that I don't want to call that a trick, but that maneuver would help a lot the developing countries without going into the very complicated process of the BRICS currency. Okay, I think that the BRICS currency has a future, but before that BRICS currency enter into circulation, we all know that it would take times and all kind of calculation before it becomes a true force for the global South. And the third thing is that Trump will probably, sadly, allow Peter Thiel to implement his spy system of Palantir, which is sadly the first very essential step for implementing the infamous North American technique. And I don't want to remind you that some days ago, Elon Musk made twice a very clear Zikhai, okay? And that Zikhai was a symbol for fascism. And
when he did the Zig Heil, the arm signal. I see what you're saying. All right. He did that.
Yes.
Yeah, he did that. Yeah.
Yes. And you know that they are so smug and so hubristic and so sure of themselves that they don't make even the small effort to hide it, because the North American technique is a fascist structure that would probably be implemented in the next generation, which, once again, I repeat myself, the implementation of the Palantir spy system would be the first step. So I think that would be Trump's legacy. Maybe there are other things, but I would say that it would be the big things of Trump's legacy.
Okay. I'm probably going to be the most negative. I think that Trump he's a demagogue. He's a populist. But I think he's a charlatan. I think he means well, but I think he is no different than Johnson, Ford, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Obama, you know, a Bush, Obama, you know, these people are, other than Nixon, who tried and was kicked out, and JFK, who was murdered in Dealey Plaza in Dallas. I think these people have really little power. I think that Trump will, to satisfy his base, his World Economic Forum technocrats will let him, remove 20,000 soldiers from, you know, Germany, and they'll let him, maybe talk to Kim in North Korea, and he'll talk to Putin, and they'll cut a deal. And Peter Thiel is the guru for Trump's vice president. I mean, basically he has been groomed by what's his name? Van? I can't think of his name right now.
J.D. Vance, J.D.
Yeah,
Vance.
J.D. Vance. He is a Peter Thiel tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sorry to say, but Trump is a Marian Adelson tool. And I think that what's going to happen is he's going to, do something. The big joker, the big wild card is what is he going to do with China? But I think because I don't think he has any good options. But because China is just too big, too badass, too powerful, and too savvy for Trump to do much. But I think his golden Trump's golden calf is Israel, and he will support Israel to the hilt. He and Netanyahu are simply basically Siamese twins. In his first administration, he moved the U.S. Embassy to East Jerusalem, which was extremely symbolic, and he was the one that got the Abraham Accords going and using Marian Adelson's hundreds of millions of dollars to bribe neighboring countries to recognize Israel diplomatically. And I'm going to make a brave statement, but I think it's going to happen. And nobody will be able to do anything about it, and nobody will do anything about it. But Israel will annex the Golan Heights officially. Israel will essentially start the annexation of Syria, and they'll duke it out with an Israeli puppet called Turkey to carve up Syria. And I think that what's going to happen in his 4 years is Israel is going to annex the West Bank. I mean, they already have. There's almost nothing left of it. It's so carved up. It's so carved up, with settlements that it doesn't even exist anymore. And I think it's also very possible, Kushner, his son, can buy property, and Biden can buy property, and on the Mediterranean, they may even annex northern Gaza. So I and what's so sad about this is that nothing can be done about it. Nothing. Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, Jordan, they're all just complete and total whores for Israel. Turkey is a whore for Israel. They have been bought, they have been bought for They have been bought for generations, bribed, blackmailed, and extorted for generations. And so I'm very pessimistic about Palestine. I think it's going to go much, much worse. And Trump, well, I even found in 2019 the headlines in the Israeli Gazette or whatever. It is a major newspaper in or no, it was the Israeli Times. That's right, the Israeli Times, which is like the New York Times of Israel, with big headline in 2019, Trump is the first Jewish U.S. president. And I think that's exactly what's happened. And I think that he will basically give Israel everything they want. He gave them everything they asked for in his first administration, and they want the West Bank, they want the Golan Heights, they want Syria, and another wild card, of course, is Hezbollah in Lebanon. They have to deal with them, but with their land bridge now cut off from Iran and Iraq to supply arms to them, I don't know how they're going to keep keep the pressure up. The other wild card is Yemen, but they've stopped, you know, because of this bogus ceasefire, which will not last. And Yemen was causing, you know, Israel, you know, the pain that they needed to feel for their genocide. And so I'm very negative about it. You know, he'll look good. I mean, he's a consummate actor. I mean, he is an actor. He was in Hollywood. I mean, Trump is Hollywood. So he's a
Well,
consummate actor, and he makes the MAGA people feel really, really, you know, empowered. But I need, you know, the MAGA people need to remember that if you watch the film footage of his inauguration, there was no Bible. He did not put his hand on any Bible. So he has betrayed his Christian base. He has betrayed his MAGA base, so I'm pretty negative. Other than there'll be some good optics, some good smoke and mirrors, and it'll look good. But he will do nothing that his bosses, as you talk about, and also the woke, you know, the male, female, you know, getting rid of the 10 different genders and all that. He will. That they can delay the WEF can put that off for 4 years, and that'll look good, and he'll do some things that look good. I also like to point out that he just had was it Larry Ellison or somebody he had in the White House about mRNA vaccines that will have mRNA vaccines for everybody, and his warp speed with his bringing the COVID vaccines in, you know, during COVID and killing millions of people. I'm pretty negative, and I'm sorry, that's not a good way to end the show, but I'm pretty negative about what Trump's going to do materially, not superficially, but material. I don't think much is going to happen. I think it's going to maybe get worse.
Yes.
Sorry about that. Sorry about the downer.
No, but you're right, Jeff, because Obama was playing on the image of the first black African American president,
Yeah,
right?
even though it was half white.
Yeah, but that's okay. Let's say he was black enough, okay? So, but Trump is playing on the image of a traditional America coming back, okay? And once again, I insist on the fact he's a small plutocrat. For the true plutocrats, he's almost a person of the upper middle class, okay? I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's almost that.
Yeah,
Exactly.
he's a rich Truman.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
He's a
he's
rich
a rich
Truman.
he's a rich
Exactly.
Truman. Tr Trump's
Exactly.
dad Trump's dad was Trump's dad was a New York slumlord,
Yeah. That's
and
exactly what it
Truman's
was.
Tr Truman's dad was a grocer, but unfortunately, I think they're both under the thumb of people that do not have our interests at heart. So
No. No,
Yeah.
I share your pessimism about many things. I think that any kind of a space that they give Trump is because they think this is the most, shall we say, best option for us. I'm talking about the real ruling circles, the real ruling class, the real, shall we say, plutocrats instead of this minor.
The City of London and Wall Street, that's where the power lies, you
That the power
know.
lies. It hasn't been broken.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And so whatever they have in store for the rest of the world is something that we have to be basically, shall we say, aware or alert, because they will definitely try to do something that is, shall we say, conducive to strengthening their power hold. Their power hold,
Yes.
they feel it is slipping. They feel it waning, and they're trying to do what is impossible, not only to stop that, but to expand it again. And I think that whoever is the figurehead in the White House, in this case Trump, they will use all his characteristics to introduce. And they can also introduce tentatively some really repressive measures and see how they play, and then blame Trump. I mean, they can
Absolutely.
Trump as a lab, as a laboratory, you know? He can be persuaded to do this or that, and then boom, ah, look, we told you, he's a fascist, he's a dictator, whatever. So, you know, they have actually more room to do ugly things with Trump than even under that idiot that just, you know, demented idiot that just left the stage. They can get away with more things.
Well, Patrice, that's truly the modus operandi of the oligarchy. You have the good cop and you have the bad cop. Okay, Obama was an example of the good cop. Okay, at least in the eyes of most people. Okay, he was a good cop, and you get a bad cop, good cop, bad cop, good cop, bad cop, and etc. But I would say that the element of positivity and of hope here, that the Anglo-American oligarchy is not the only game in town right now. And the other game in town is getting stronger and stronger. And I would like to mention the incident of Red Note, the Xiaohongshu, where the American people suddenly realize that the true American dreams is happening in China right now. So I would say that it's part of the fact that they are no longer the only game in town. And you know perfectly that, of course, the average people, they don't have the same tools of power than the oligarchs, but it's a positive element. And we will see. And I would like to introduce a strange comparison. Most of the time, we compare the US to the Roman Empire. But I think it's not exactly the right comparison. I think it's more the Ottoman Empire. Because you know that in the Ottoman Empire, they use slaves to manage their state, right? Even the prime minister, the pasha, the grand vizier, was most of the time a former slave. Like their empresses were former slaves. Well, you see here in the US, or let's say the Western Empire in general, you have a very small circle of true plutocrats that most of the time we don't even know the faces and the names, using smaller plutocrats or upper middle class people that I equate to be their slaves for what is the obvious circus of politics. And you know perfectly that the Ottoman Empire had a kind of expansion phase from 1299 to 1699 for 4 centuries. But I make the hypothesis that the expansion of the American Empire would be shorter. And I think that the expansion phase of the American Empire has ended with the special military operation in Ukraine. And from now on, it will be a slow decline till its collapse. So we will see in the next three gener well, I will die before the end of the third generation, but I will see in the next 30, 40 years if that the general trend will be confirmed.
Right. I agree with you. I find that what you say is exactly the same way I look at it, but minus your originality. You said it first, and I cannot agree with you more. That's exactly what it is. And of course, each empire has its own historical accidents that shapes and perceptions, you know, as Marx or other people like that have said many times, that history repeats itself in some ways, but not exactly the same. There are some things that stay there in place, and some things that are basically revised by the flow of history. So obviously, I mean, the American Empire was essentially an accident of history. It was, in some ways, the overreach and the stupidity, the hubris of the Brits, who precipitated the First and Second World Wars, you know, particularly. And later on, I mean, when the world emerged from the Second World War, Sure, the United States was the only member of the Anglo Empire, to put it away, or the Western Empire, that was intact. Intact. It was an accident of history. It wasn't something that was projected like that, although there was calculation in the timing of their interventions. Yeah. But I think that is more or less the way I see the arc of history for this empire. And
Yeah,
in the
but
meantime,
Patrice, what would be your idea of Trump's legacy if you have to mention two that you would hypothesize are Trump's legacy?
oh, that's a very good. I don't know. I think that see, because we're dealing with false reality all the time when we deal in matters of judging the president of the United States or the president of any kind of big political figure in the West, their system of power is such that they have all these figureheads that are one or two layers away from the actual rulers of the system, right? Many of which, as you said very, very aptly, we don't even hear or know about. As a matter of fact, some clans are so extensive in their holdings and so on that they don't even know what they have. There was an article by Whitney Webb, I think it was, somebody who did an article talking about the fact that they have a name even for this. It's like pilferage by the servants of the super rich, right? Because the super rich, the actual super rich, have so much and they have so many properties all over the world and so many that there are all kinds of little mice that are constantly eating and gnawing away and making fortunes for themselves in a way that they have to set up internal police so that they're not being bled away by all these guys who are constantly doing that. It's such an extensive fortune, the properties. So this guy who wrote this article was talking about the fact that the British nobility, particularly the royals, they don't know how much they own. That's how much they have. The Saudi royals, they don't know how much they own. And they hired a firm like some accounting firm, famous accounting firm, to actually calculate what they own. And these guys have been working at it for like 3 or 4 years and still they cannot come close. It's like the Pentagon, right? The Pentagon, you have a trillion here and a trillion there, they disappear. Nobody knows what it is. It is an
Absolutely.
extensive network of wealth that has embedded itself across the globe and so on and so forth. And, so with that very clumsy preface, for which I apologize to you, I must say that prognosticating what the legacy of Trump will be is like asking, well, what does a figurehead do that will be his? We don't know because there are so many possibilities here. The world is in flux. There are so many things that the Eurasian powers can do and will do in the meantime. We're dealing in this fluid world with the dialectic of history and so on and so forth. Trump can be played for all the characteristics of personality that he brings to bear, will be utilized by his managers to the extent that they can do it and get away with it. But frankly, the dark forces, to put it that way, that control Trump and control every American president will be the ones to decide this. So what will be the legacy? I think that they're threatened by the crisis of legitimacy. So they will try to do an impossible act to put the pyramid on its apex and try to stabilize it there, which is cannot be done. Can't be done because the essential characteristic of the empire is that it's an immoral criminal empire. It's criminal even when it is being, nice to you. It's an interesting thing because they're picking your pocket to begin with. So you have a situation where there's an organized crime syndicate, so to speak, running this extensive apparatus, and they have to face sooner or later the crisis of legitimacy, so that in their thinking, in their corporate thinking, which is a stunted kind of imagination, they'll say, oh, well, we can apply two approaches here. More propaganda, which has failed, obviously, to counteract this trend to more and more clear thinking about things, and more repression. So how do you introduce repression in a system that is permeated by all these mythologies about freedom, personal freedom, and this and that? There are many obstacles. So this presents a crisis of governance that I don't know that these people have it very clear how they're going to proceed. They have studied, I know they have all these think tanks and all that, and all these prostitutes who do nothing but think for them. And they're all trying to solve that issue. It's a Gordian knot. I mean, how do you solve this issue? How do you apply extensive levels of repression without accepting the reality that sooner or later people are going to realize it, that you're doing that to them? When people begin to disappear, not by the tens or the hundreds, but by the thousands, are the masses not going to be aware that something like that? I mean, the very guards, I mean, the rich are not going to be, manning the concentration camps, the elimination camps, the helicopters that drop people into the ocean in the middle of the night. The working class is doing all those things in uniforms, in manning all these apparatus of repression. Sooner or later, those people are going to be talking to somebody else, and the truth will come out. What will happen then? Well, anybody's guess, right? So the system is intrinsically untenable because a system based on corruption and systemic exploitation sooner or later begins to cave in on its own weight. It's unsustainable. The only system that is sustainable is a system that goes along the laws of entropy. In other words, it leads to its own sustainability because there is an equalization of dimensional powers. It cannot exist in a situation where you're constantly fighting what you might call the laws of physics in politics. So this system is doomed. The question is that it can do a humongous amount of damage while it dies, while it is retiring from the stage of history. As you have said so many times this morning or this evening, there is this parallel universe of power emerging with BRICS, and that will determine then a dialectic on the old empire, the American Empire and the Anglo Empire, which will, probably formulate different policies that they will be tested for a while. The empire, you can see that they can test things in Europe. They can test things in determined sectors of Europe or in a given nation that has, something that you might say, well, sociologically, these people are close to us, so let's try it here. But it's a big guess at this point because we're basically just on the eve of this humongous experiment. The challenging powers are experimenting with some things, although much less, because they have a clear, first of all, they have great thinking people at their helm. The helm of the challenging powers, Russia and China and Iran, they have people who can think. The empire, the old empire, doesn't have that. Doesn't have that. And secondly, although there are many smart people in the corporate world, so-called corporatives, whatever, they're politically, they're stupid people. They're stupid. The corporatives are stupid. And you can see that in many manifestations of the system. For example, just look at the advertising curve in this country, the way it has evolved, the stupid things that they put on ads more and more. The corporations are dumb in some ways. They can say, oh, we're super intelligent, we go to Harvard, we get degrees in Stanford, and all that. It doesn't add up to actual intelligence. Political and social intelligence, they're basically dwarfs. They're mediocre, intrinsically mediocre. Even the people in old Europe that used to pride themselves on having, this tremendous Le Polytechnique, blah, 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 blah. Today they produce mediocrities,
Yes.
opportunistic, careerist mediocrities.
Well,
So,
you know that l'École nationale d'administration publique, who has been created by De Gaulle precisely, is now a machine to reproduce the so-called elite. It's because under De Gaulle, I think that the students of École nationale d'administration publique was about 30 to 40% of sons from the working class.
Yes.
And now I think it's even less than 5% of sons from the working class because it's a machine to reproduce the upper class.
Exactly. Yeah. Eventually, this is what we were talking before, you know, that if you have a capitalist sector or an aristocratic sector that is a perverse, immoral, so-called plutocratic or aristocratic sector, when you have that sector working inside your society, if you have a socialist society and you have that sector inside, it's like having a tumor there, having a cancer there. It will infiltrate everything. Look what happened to the NIH. It's a case study in how gradually you denigrate a system that you create at one point with great acceptance by the public, and then you begin to denigrate it gradually, until the people themselves, this thing doesn't work. Replace it with private systems, right? They can create all these things because they control the media, they control the political class, and the accumulation of lies confuse the people. So here you have, by the gradualism that you just mentioned, there is this, how could I say, inevitable evolution as the power concentrates in this plutocratic tier of society. They will create the institutions necessary to serve their ends. And you can see that in the way they have destroyed all these worthwhile meritocratic institutions.
Well, guys, let's call it a day.
What time is it in your time?
We've been going to we've been going for over an hour and a half,
Wow.
and so it's
I was
been
younger when we
wonderful. I learned so much from you two guys tonight, and I just really
You're so smart.
and I can't wait to
We'll hit the bed
do
again.
the first edit on the transcript. And then I
Oh.
send it to my Pakistani editor, who gets rid of all the uhs, ahs, yows, and the thousands of them. And we don't realize how badly we talk until you see the transcript. It's just
No,
unbelievable.
it's
And
unbelievable.
but it works when you're talking. But boy, when you read it, you really got to clean it up. It's just unbelievable. Anyway, this is Jeff J. Brown in Taiwan Province in China. And we have Patrice Granville in the Hudson Valley of New York. And we have Quan Le, our maestro philosopher in Montreal, Canada. And all three of us are members of the China Writers Group. I want to wish both of you and all of the people who will eventually be watching this around the world. I'll give all of you a Buddhist bow, give you a very Buddhist bow, and wish you all a very happy Chinese New Year of the Wood Snake in 3 days. It's going to be exciting, and we'll have to when we come back, we'll do this again. We'll do it like the last weekend of each month, and
Yeah.
a lot of shit's going to go down in the next
Oh my God.
in the next 30 days. So
Yeah.
it'll be an exciting show next in a month. So thanks, guys. I'm gonna go have breakfast. I rolled out of bed at 3:30 and haven't even had a cup of coffee. So I'm gonna go have breakfast.
My thanks to you for
Bye-bye.
organizing this and quality. For everything that he contributed tonight, today.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank
Good
you.
night.
Thank
Bye-bye.
you. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.